Yes, you lucky people, just sit back for a moment, relax, and notice the delightfully clean, cool, and refreshing atmosphere of this scientifically air-conditioned theater. Great, isn't it? Remember, you can enjoy great motion picture entertainment all summer long in cool comfort at this theater.
Super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Well, as I take a big fucking hit off this fatty I just rolled, we're at the end of probably the shittiest fucking year in the history of civilization in general. 2012. And the reason I say that is a lot of bad shit went down this year. From droughts to killer hurricanes and to the proliferation of douchebags that we have to deal with here. Both at Jackalope 105 FM, both in my personal and professional life, and I have to address some situations here because I'm not letting certain shit rest. If anybody recalls, we had a certain gentleman named Rob Delamorte who had a show, Delamorte's Dungeon of whatever the fuck it is. And his show was asked to leave because of derogatory comments he made toward me, toward a certain female show host, and certain other people where he was the one who actually insisted that Todd from a hospital bed produce his year anniversary show because he was that fucking important. Well, time rolls on. We found out that Rob ain't all that important and he ain't all that in a fucking nutshell. Don't forget, this is the guy who, when I defended this woman, told me about his military experience and how he could fucking eat me for breakfast. Well, maybe you can eat me, Rob. That's about it. You can eat me. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you can eat my dick because you're a dick sucker. That's all you are. You're a fucking worthless piece of shit who somehow snuck in under the fucking wire and ain't gonna wash. And all listeners better be aware of this shit, that this is the guy who claimed that his involvement in horror caused him to lose his mind and beat up his girlfriend, supposedly, and land up in jail. So now he's back again because he's a fucking poser and can't. He's one of those guys that needs to be heard or needs to be in the spotlight. Where I've said on numerous occasions that if I get pissed off, I don't need to be heard by fucking anybody. I don't have the ego where I have to be heard every week or have to have a radio show or anything. I really don't give a fuck. But I'll be fucked if I'll be on the same station with a fucking low-life loser who threatens me, who threatens women, beats up women, then thinks he's the end-all, be-all of horror. I've got a message for you and a message for anybody else that wants to fucking take me up on this. I'm getting really tired of internet threats and how people are going to kick my ass and think I'm old and think I'm fucking past it. Well, people know where I'm going to be first weekend in April. Why don't you show up and say it to my face? Then I'll be interested in to hear what you say. Until then, it's just internet fucking muscle bullshit, which is all it is bullshit, because none of these people who run their mouths and make threats or anything can back up a goddamn thing they say. And that's the God's honest truth. They can't back up a fucking thing they say because they ain't got the fucking balls. All these people who were trashing Cinema Wasteland and said the show sucks, none of them ever been to a fucking show. You know why? Because they can't get out of mommy and daddy's basement. And, you know, their welfare check or whatever, their food stamps, they can't sell enough to get a fucking bus pass to come up to Cinema Wasteland. So you know something? Fuck you all. I'm sick of you. That's the ultimatum. You got something to say to me? Bring it up there. Or, you know, when I have these call-in shows that nobody's taking me up on, you could call in and take me to task, which you won't. So, don't know why he got in, don't know how he got in, but I'll tell you one thing. If I got anything to say about it, he ain't going to be around for much longer. And as far as the people who brought him in, if you got an issue with me saying that, and we're all on the supposedly same show and we're all supposed to be fucking family, well, there's a lot of incest going on in family lately. You got something to say to me? Say it. I'm on the air. I'll be on live again. I understand we're going to go back to a somewhat normal fucking schedule where hopefully it'll be more horror than horror, the Grindhouse, and hopefully the Dark Guy's Pleasure Chest again on Saturday. Because we want to give you people what you want to hear. And we've been doing that. But unfortunately, egos come into play, stupidity. People got to get their shit together with this. And excuse me while I relight my blunt here, as I am celebrating the incoming new year, even though this year came all over my ass. I know that's a fucking wonderful visual I just gave you, but it's the truth. This fucking year fucked me in the ass and dropped a load on my cheeks. And it ain't going to happen again. Last week, a lot of outrage about the Westboro Baptist Church. I'm not going to point my fingers at anyone. A lot of people said they were going to call in. We all know that nobody called in except Superfan Rob. And I want to publicly thank Gary Kent for calling in and give me a half hour of his time. I know he wasn't feeling well, but he wanted to be involved, and I appreciate that. Otherwise, the show wouldn't have been the show. Because everybody had all this information and wanted to rally against the Westboro Bastard Church. And I guess that was earlier in the week. And by the time it got to Saturday night, the fuse fizzled out. Which is typical with the attention span of the American public and people in general. Because, you know, since all those children were killed a couple of weeks ago, there's been close to, 500 gun deaths in this country already for the end of the year? So we've accomplished nothing, and debates can go on, and the other side, one side of the coin. Number one, if you want my opinion of it, which you probably don't, I don't see where anybody needs a fucking assault weapon in their fucking house or to go hunting, unless you're a really, really shitty fucking shot. So hunting with assault weapons is fucking bullshit. Hunting with assault weapons is like performing a circumcision with a machete. It's fucking overkill. If you can't take out your kill in one fucking shot, you're a pretty piss poor marksman. If you got to empty a clip at it, you're a worse marksman, and you're making the animal suffer. I got no problem with anybody hunting as long as you eat what you fucking kill. You fucking shoot something to put their head on the wall, you're a douchebag, like the guy who shot the fucking wolf up in Iowa again. Another fucking douchebag. Killing for the sake of killing is fucking murder, no matter how you fucking slice it. And unfortunately, we got a plethora of them fucking running around here. But back to what I was saying about the attention span. It's really pathetic that something like this, you know, was yesterday's news, and it was even more pathetic about the whole media circus surrounding it, the whole media jumping on this and shoving microphones in kids' faces and things. That was fucking atrocious. And, you know, you point the finger at this, point the finger at that. Yeah, mentally deranged people shouldn't own guns. That should be a given. That's fucking common sense. And how mentally deranged was this kid's mother to even take somebody who was obviously fucked up in the head and on medication down to a fucking range and teach him how to shoot? Well, bet she's smoking a fucking turd in hell right now along with him. And we should feel sorry for these people. I feel sorry for 20 fucking lives that got snuffed out. I feel sorry for a heroic teacher and heroic principal who tried to intervene and got killed. I don't feel sorry for that kid's mother. I don't feel sorry for him. Our system sucks. People get lost in it. And unfortunately, people in this country are paranoid that they seem to expect that the government's going to swoop in like Adolf Hitler did and take their guns. Well, I got something to say. The only reason I would even own a gun is to protect my house from fucking lunatics that are out there. I wouldn't walk around and carry a fucking gun. I would want one in my home to protect me because it takes the police too long to respond for an emergency. So that's the only reason I would have one. I don't need an AK-47, a Mac fucking 10, or any of that other shit. I just need your good old-fashioned regular caliber fucking handgun just to keep the fucking bad guys away from me. And there's a lot of fucking bad guys. And yeah, maybe the government is going to go around and confiscate your fucking guns. I don't know. But all I know is there's a shitload of fucking guns in this fucking country in private hands, and they ain't going to give them up fucking peacefully, I don't think. So it's going to be a never-ending fucking debate. And the only thing I'm going to leave you with on the end of this debate is do what you got to do to protect yourself, because nobody else will protect you and yours by any means necessary. And you can take that for whatever you want to interpret it as. That's all I'm going to say, because I'm protecting me and mine by any means necessary. I don't go out and look for fucking problems, nor will I ever go out and look for problems. But if a problem fucking decides to come and knocking on my fucking door, I'll handle it the old-fashioned way. That's all. So that's that. You know, like going back to the attention span, there was so much fucking anger and hatred going toward those Westboro cocksuckers. But like I said, and I'll admit it on the air, I did send them a fucking package. And I'm sure a lot of other people sent them a package. But the bottom line is they were exposed for what they are. They're a fucking hate group made up of fucking lawyers who use people's misery to fucking profit by suing the fucking municipalities when the municipalities violate their rights. They have no rights. They shouldn't be a church. Their tax-exempt status should be revoked. And as a matter of fact, tax-exempt status for all these churches should be all revoked, because maybe it'll give everybody a level playing field, separation of church and state. They're using that, I think, to say they're tax-exempt because the church has no, supposedly no voice in the ruling of the fucking people, which is bullshit because we know they're trying to get a voice just by the assholes we have in fucking Congress today. So we're how many fucking days away from going over the fiscal cliff? You know something? Go over it. At the bottom of it's a pile of fucking Twinkies. It ain't going to fucking hurt. You know? It ain't going to fucking hurt. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. And everybody listening to this and anybody with a fucking brain in their head would know who is fucking things up. It's crystal fucking clear. I don't have to say a name. I don't have to say a party. We all know who's doing it, because the fucking rich have to have their fucking money because it's their fucking mantra. It's their holy grail. They can hold up a fucking $100 bill and it's like a fucking crucifix to a vampire, they think. Well, thankfully, germs don't think that way. And I don't want to even go there, but I've said that before, that a germ doesn't care how much fucking money you have or what your social status is. It'll kill you just as good as it'll kill me. So if something does happen, some pandemic or something, adios, motherfuckers, because your money is fucking useless. So, yeah, I know I'm being real pleasant tonight, and I don't fucking care, because I've had a shitty year, a shitty end to the year. I wanted to do the show in rather grandiose style, maybe have some people on, but everything got fucked up. And, of course, you know, the return of Rob Delamorte fucked things up even more, because a lot of people are grumbling about that. In case you're still listening, Rob, you're not liked. You're not respected. And nobody fucking cares. So go into obscurity, because there's a ton of fucking minimum wage jobs you could be working at other than trying to be a fucking horror host or radio show host or something. So I guess your little fucking deal with what's the show he was trying to get involved with? It wasn't Dead Pit, because I already got one big turd down there. Oh, God. The guys that used to be the Horror Channel, whatever the hell they were. I guess that didn't pan out either. So, you know something? You got to realize something, kid. You're not cut out for this. Just that simple. And now we'll start drinking, because it's the new year. Now, another thing that I'm getting fucking sick and tired of hearing is the genius of Quentin Bobblehead Tarantino. His latest celluloid ripoff, Django Unchained. Now, I have to address this thing, because I'm not going to say the guy's name, because he's got a lot of respect in the industry. He's been around a long time and has written a few books and stuff. But somehow this poor, I don't know, what would be the fucking word? Starstruck, maybe? I don't know, but I'm here to tell you something. That he wrote something about, you know, that Quentin Tarantino has a feel for the black audiences because of all the films he saw with black audiences in a grindhouse. When the fuck did this idiot ever set foot in an actual grindhouse? Let's look at real fucking facts, okay? He was born in 1963. Same year Blood Feast came out, I believed. By the time he was 10 years old, that was 1973. All the good shit had already happened. Night of the Living Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I Drink Your Blood, and the porn, all the other shit, and the karate, and the spaghetti westerns. They had all fucking happened. So let's segue to 1983, where he would be 20 years old. So how much of a stretch is it to say that he didn't set foot in the grindhouse? Because he was born, I think, in Nashville, Tennessee. And I don't recall grindhouses in Nashville, Tennessee, or any of that stuff. I could be wrong, but, you know, the plethora of grindhouses I knew were on the East and West Coast, respectively, and the inner cities of Jersey and things like that. So maybe there might have been a grindhousey type thing down there. But I seriously doubted he went to one. Unless he was a teenager, if he was 17, all the good shit passed. So what did he, if he caught anything, it might have been a couple 80s flicks. Now here's the rub, okay? He was a video store clerk, where I don't recall, I don't really give a shit. But the bottom line is he was a video store clerk with a lot of time in his hands, because anybody who ever owned a video store or worked in a video store, and I own one, so I know, you have a lot of downtime in there. So you get to watch a lot of movies. So obviously the movies he was watching, City on Fire, Inglourious Basterds, a lot of, like, Italian stuff and Asian stuff that was pretty much bottom of the barrel direct in, because it was basically used for fucking filler back then. You know, most Italian films, spaghetti westerns, crime films and stuff, had to have the American name in it to legitimize it for a worldwide release. So, you know, hence when Eastwood got over there and things like that with the spaghetti westerns, Lee Van Cleef. So it was the same with the crime films. Henry Silva was big in crime films. A few other guys were big in crime films. John Saxon was in a few crime films. So you have the thing. So getting back to the, you know, the video store thing, he got to watch a lot of this stuff. And basically the stuff he was watching was a lot of shit that people really back then didn't give too much of a shit about. So I guess he wrote a script for Reservoir Dogs pretty much based on City on Fire, figuring at that point a lot of people would never have heard of that film. Which a lot of people didn't, but here was the thing. At the horror conventions, the Hong Kong stuff was coming in strong in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, a lot of bootlegs, of course, because that's, you know, what VHS was back then. But, yeah, people knew about City on Fire. And I believe Film Threat magazine called him to task on that. And everybody crapped all over them. But the bottom line is they were right. He ripped it off. And he's very lucky that Harvey Keitel didn't know anything about Hong Kong films back then, because he would have seen it for what it was. So thanks to Harvey, he gets the jump start. So basically, his whole career has been lifting shit, stealing shit, however you want to fucking phrase it, from films that he basically thought that nobody knew about. Now, you go on to, like, the film that he was up for, I guess, an Academy Award for, writer or whatever, Best Picture, Pulp Fiction. Well, here's the thing. Pulp Fiction had a black hitman and a white hitman. And, strangely enough, so did The Italian Connection in the persona of Woody Strode and Henry Silva, which was pretty much, you know, two American hitmen chasing down somebody. And, okay, this was probably flipped out, you know, on some shitty VHS label, had since then been restored. But, you know, here you go. You know, he lifted some of this stuff from another fucking movie, and everybody thought it was fucking genius. Matter of fact, the only movie that he did do was something he had to adapt the screenplay from, which was Omar Leonard for Jackie Brown, which was a pretty well-done movie for him. So then, of course, you know, I don't know why. And, you know, people say that, you know, Grindhouse was a flop, and it was a flop because, A, today's audience isn't geared to sit through close to 4 hours of programming where my audience was. So I got it. But to be perfectly honest with you, his film, Death Proof, 10 minutes into that, most of the people were leaving the fucking theater because it was boring. A talky fucking movie would have never made it in a grindhouse. Oh, don't get me wrong. You know, people tried to get the stuff in, but, you know, back then, movies opened on a Wednesday. If they weren't drawn Wednesday and Thursday, they got booted out Friday and something was put in that legitimately would draw, or they knew would draw, for the weekend, because the weekend was the big money maker. So, you know, like I said, Wednesday was the opening day, and it had to see what it was playing to, and pretty much that would have been gone. A lot of films that played the old Ann Cohen on 8th Avenue and 42nd Street were like, they'd run their 2 day, you know, for the tax break, and they weren't, you know, bringing in anybody. They fucking just put something else in by Friday for the weekend. Something they knew that would draw, you know, people in for the weekend, and then switch it over on Monday to something else. That's the way it worked. It wasn't, you know, as regimented as it is today, where, you know, the stuff always opens on Friday, or, I don't know, midnight Thursday, so it's a Friday release. I don't fucking get that, but then I don't go to the movies anymore because they all suck. So, you know, there you got that. And, you know, Kill Bill, and I was never a big martial arts guy. Some of them, you know, a few of them I saw that I liked. Most of them, you know, were just too much of those costumed epics and shit with, you know, the long-haired, white-haired monks and all the other shit. And some people really dug that shit. I didn't. So from what I understand, you know, Kill Bill is supposedly, you know, according to other people, a ripoff on another Hong Kong film called Lady Snowblood. So, you know, be that as it may, like I said, I'm not an expert on, you know, martial arts films, and I will never pretend to be. I know a few of them. But, you know, that's what they're saying. That was a ripoff on, you know, Lady Snowblood. And Inglourious Basterds, you know, number one, if you watch the original film, it's supposedly they push it like a Dirty Dozen type action film. It's really slow moving, and in the interviews and in the extended features, they tell the reason why, because there was something where they really couldn't make real explosions back in Italy then, because there was some terrorist groups going on, so they really couldn't have explosives floating around like stuff that we all use today in film. So, other than having Fred the Hammer Williamson in his first, European role, and Bo Svenson, who obviously the two were, ex-jocks and were probably vying for camera time all the time, that film was pretty unremarkable. And really, till somebody reissued it on DVDs, and I just picked it up because it was supposedly, extended and shit, and honestly, it was boring. So why the fuck he thought he could make anything of that, I don't know, but he just took it and took the fucking title and made this Jews beat the fuck out of the Nazis movies, obviously to appease the Weinsteins for losing all that fucking money on Grindhouse, I thought. And that's a joke. I'm not being fucking racist. So, now we come to Django Unchained, which, again, you're talking an obscure film. Up until, Anchor Bay and Bill Lustig dug it up, released it, also with its only legit sequel, Django Strikes Again. So, again, this was something, it got a very bad VHS release in a big box with a rather generic, cowboy fucking, art on it. Really didn't even put itself over as a spaghetti western. But here's the thing. Eastwood stuff hit a little early on, so basically, riding on the success of that, a lot of distributors wanted to get anything onto the market, spaghetti western type, that had an American star in it. And Sergio Corbucci had been directing stuff for Albert Band, Charlie's father. And he had done a couple films, The Hellbenders, The Tramplers. And his thing was, he did a film called Minnesota Clay. And that starred Cameron Mitchell. And it was a gunfighter who was going blind, which showed Corbucci's penchant for having disfigured or flawed heroes. So, this one ran, Minnesota Clay, Cameron Mitchell in the lead. Didn't do a hell of a lot. Now, Django came in, I believe, around 65. And, Eastwood was way on top at that point. The stuff had, come in hard. So, Franco Nero was not a known name. It ran about a week and then disappeared. It was out and out banned over in Great Britain as a video nasty for the excessive violence. And it was a lot more violent than an Eastwood Western. They were shooting down Mexicans that were running for sport. They had the KKK in there, but wearing red hoods, I guess was the start of the whole thing. And the cop topper was that, Django, played by Franco Nero, comes in over this guy singing about, whatever the fuck it was, dragging a casket through this muddy Western street. And that just set the whole fucking tone for the whole thing, because in the casket he has a machine gun, which he uses to cut down all these KKK guys. Now, again, like, the Eastwood movies, it's something involving money, playing both ends against the middle. The subplot was that this colonel who's in charge of the KKK in the town had something to do with the death of Django's wife. So there's all kinds of double and triple crosses. What happens is, they get the money winds up getting lost somehow. Django gets in the middle of this whole thing with the KKK, these Mexican bandits, who he betrays both. The Mexican bandits crush his hands with gun butts and horses and leave him in a cemetery. Now, I don't give a fuck how good of a fucking director Quentin Tarantino is, or people say he is. You will never be able to top this scene, because Django is behind a wooden cross. Both his hands are fucking crushed and useless. And this colonel and what's left of his henchmen are closing in. And this is a really painfully, protractively drawn-out scene where Django's using his teeth to pull the screws out of the fucking trigger guard on the gun. Then once he does that, and these guys are saying, you better say your prayers because you're going to die, this and that, and the other thing. And now he's trying to get the gun somehow balanced on this wooden grave marker and trying to get his hand in position to fire it. And they keep getting closer and closer, and they go, "We don't hear you praying. You're not praying. We can't hear you." And he stands up and he goes, "Can you hear me now?" And he fans the fucking gun and blows them all away. Now the fade out is to the gun still on the cross with blood all over it. And that was the end of the movie. But it wasn't the end of this weird legacy that sprung up, because there were over 50 in name only unrelated sequels played by just about anybody, from Terrence Hill to George Eastman to, Anthony Steffen, Montgomery. I mean, it seemed like everybody who was connected with Italian Westerns in general got a shot at being Django. Now, Django might have been on the poster and might have been on the press book, but sometimes the name wasn't even mentioned in the movie. And sometimes, again, it was. Viva Django, Terrence Hill with the machine gun again. And eerily, that shot of him walking across the sand dune shooting the machine gun was reprised when he was in March or Die, the Foreign Legion movie with Gene Hackman. So it's just this whole odd, you know, thing about how many, you know, knockoffs and ripoffs there was of this character. And Franco Nero never reprised the character until he was down in South America, and I believe it was Ted Post was directing. And they were talking about, you know, well, how, you know, that movie was so good. How come you guys never, you know, did a sequel? So right then and there, they decided maybe they should do something. But, of course, they wouldn't do it without getting Sergio Corbucci's blessing, because he was the one who created it. So they got his blessing. They made Django Strikes Again, which takes place, I believe, 25 years after the first film. Django has gotten rid of his gun. He's been in a monastery. He's just about to be a monk when this woman who was dying comes to him and tells him that he had fathered a daughter with her, and the daughter was taken by this group of slavers run by Christopher Conley, who, you know, when you look at this, you're saying fucking Nazis, which is basically what they're saying. So he has to make a decision. He's not going to take his final vows. He's going to go out and get his daughter. Well, he tries to reason, you know, with the character played by Christopher Conley, and winds up in a mining camp as a prisoner, where these people are basically worked to death for whatever they're digging up, which escapes me right about now. And Donald Pleasance is also in there playing an entomologist. And the reason he's there is because the Christopher Connolly character has an obsession with butterflies and is looking for this rare butterfly, and he couldn't catch it for him, so he wound up in there. So they rig up a way for Django to escape. He goes to the cemetery, and there's a grave marker that says Django on it. And he starts to dig. Well, while he's digging, this funeral hearse comes in, chased by bandits. They blow the driver away. They're about to rape the woman when you hear this voice yell out, "Let the woman go." And they're all looking around going, "What the fuck's going on?" So then they pinpoint the voice coming out of this open grave. So they yell, "Hey, it's a good thing you're in a grave, because you're going to spend eternity there." So all of a sudden, Django pops up. What was buried in the grave was the machine gun. And he proceeds to fucking waste all them. Then he starts talking to the gun, "I have to clean you up. We have a lot of work to do." So, of course, he goes about, you know, going around taking these people out and eventually attacking the camp in you know, one of those, you know, on the edge of your seat fucking cheering scenes, and, you know, liberates the camp, kills Christopher Connolly or has him killed, and gets his daughter. And that was basically the only legit sequel. So, and again, like I said, you know, Corbucci, going back to the original Django, had his thing for, you know, flawed and disfigured heroes, you know, going, you know, from Django to The Great Silence, where the principal character, Silence, was mute because bounty hunters cut his vocal cords so he couldn't turn them in. That's another whole story. And you know something? That would have been the smarter move if you wanted to rip something off, because not a lot of people had heard about that. So when I had heard originally what this atrocity was going to be, and rechristening Django as an escaped slave, I was like, what the fuck? You're merging blaxploitation into a spaghetti western, and for what fucking purpose? And I keep seeing this fucking interview where Quentin keeps saying he's trying to empower the black man. Well, you know something? There's no more civil rights marches. I mean, we have a black president, so I would say the black man is pretty fucking empowered already. So where the fuck do you get off coming off like you're some kind of fucking savior for the Afro-American community because you're putting Jamie Foxx in a lead role from an Italian spaghetti Western that you ripped off? I think you're what you really want to do is empowering the black man is to drop to your knees and suck somebody's cock is what I think you want to fucking do, because you're really, really giving me that impression, pal. And like, as somebody who was part of the fucking weird sexual underground, we had these guys who used to hang around all black, you know, places. We used to call them dinge queens because they were weird white guys looking to suck off a black guy. Not that I give a shit, but it just seems you're going that fucking route. You want to empower the black man. What the fuck? You know, and even Spike Lee's pissed off because you must have used the N-word close to 100 fucking times in there. I mean, dude, I don't know where the fuck you're coming from, but I'm sick and tired of you being called this fucking savior of the fucking grindhouse when you've never been in one, when you're basically ass-raping every fucking genre you can get your hands on. What's going to be next? Maybe you're going to go to the big time and remake Gone with the Wind with an all-fucking Asian cast and change history that way. You know, number one, the whole fucking tone of the first few previews out was racist. I mean, the whole deal with Jamie Foxx saying, killing white people and getting paid for it? What's not to like? Oh, is that tongue-in-cheek? I don't think so. But let me tell you something about how this would go. All right? This guy frees the slave Jamie Foxx and hands him a gun. 18 people would have fucking shot him within 5 minutes because just the sight of a nigger with a gun back then, pardon my French, but I'm not going to pardon myself, would have fucking incited that. You have no fucking sense of history because a lot of Southerners, you know, really resented the fact that the slaves got freed. And, you know, we've all seen the films and historical accounts of what happened to a lot of slaves, how they were fucking massacred and just fucking out and out killed for spite. So this whole thing about making him a black bounty hunter, hunting down bad white guys and shit and whatever the fuck. Django wasn't a black bounty hunter. Django wasn't a bounty hunter at all. Django was a guy who came out of the fucking Civil War to find his wife was fucking murdered by some, you know, guy who was going to form a fucking KKK, wanted to get his fingers in the pie, just wanted to get his shit, do his dirty work, and get the fuck on with his life. And it didn't happen that way. Now, if somebody had wanted to remake that film the way it would have been, yeah, okay, fine. That would have been fucking cool, except you're not going to find an actor the caliber of Franco Nero to pull off that fucking role. And just the fact that you stuck him in as a cameo is a fucking insult. And I heard he didn't even want to do it because the script sucked so much the first time. It's probably the money, too, so I'm sure he got a nice hefty fucking paycheck from doing that. And I'm really happy to hear that he may be doing something called Django Lives, which sort of spits in your fucking face a little bit right now, because you know something? If you had done that with Clint Eastwood's character, people would have been up in arms. But you took something obscure and just twisted it around, because a lot of people don't know about that movie. A lot of people after tonight are going to be looking to find that movie, going to look and be finding Django Strikes Again, because they're two good fucking movies. And the whole thing is, you know, I don't know what you're trying to do, but you're not creating the ambiance that film had or those places had, the grindhouses in general. The grindhouses are dead. They're never going to be around again, period. If there's a few laying around, they're fucking boarded up, falling down, loaded with fucking rats, and I'd love to open one up, but it's never going to fucking happen because that era is fucking done, okay? I hate to say it, but that era is fucking done. The culture still thrives through other people, people that have been there. Unfortunately, our numbers are dwindling, and I'm sure when I'm fucking gone, somebody will rewrite my fucking life history too. But till that day, I'm just going to fucking run my mouth as much as I can about this shit, because I don't like the way everybody's being bullshitted and swerved to think this guy spent all this time in an actual grindhouse when he didn't. I mean, I'm not going to blow my horn, but I'll fucking run it through the fucking grinder again. I've been seeing this shit since I was old enough to fucking watch a TV or get dropped off in a fucking movie theater for a fucking kiddie matinee, which was two fucking horror films. I have decades of actually being in a fucking grindhouse. Unfortunately, I'm fucking old, but decades. But I would, you know, most of my fucking youth, my adulthood, my nights, my growing up were spent in fucking grindhouses because I love fucking movies and still do. And it just really, really irks me that this guy is so, you know, these fucking fanboys are like sucking his fucking dick. And it's fucking bullshit. You know, people go, well, you know, How come you don't do anything? I don't have money behind me. I have no aspirations. I would like to make a fucking movie just to prove I could fucking do it, but I don't have the fucking capital behind me. But that isn't what I fucking do for a living. I got fucking mouths to feed. I have to keep a roof over my head. The days of, you know, taking chances were way back in the fucking days. But unfortunately, like I said, I was married. I had to fucking keep a roof over my head and feed people and shit. You know, some guys want to throw it all on number seven and see what happens. And I'm like one of those guys, too. But after a while, you got to realize, wake up and smell the coffee, especially today. You're not going to make any fucking money doing this. We don't make any money doing this fucking radio show. We do it for the love of the business. But like I say, again, it just pisses me off with a bunch of fucking posers like him and the douchebag I spoke of before in the opening of the show, that they're the end-all fucking be-all. You're not. The guys that are the end-all be-all, unfortunately, there are very few of them around. The few that are left, Ted B. Michaels, Herschel Gordon Lewis, Gary Kent, Bud Cardos, you know, guys, you know, Wasteland guests, you know, there's so many of them. Sid Haig, Bill Moseley, Michael Berryman. You know, the guys, unfortunately, you know, the big guy, the big guns of the past aren't firing anymore. John Carpenter, George Romero, Wes Craven. You know, their guns are silent for a while. Some guys are coming up with some good fucking shit. You know, Walking Dead was great. You know, it's a great fucking show. But as far as horror's been so fucking watered down and computer generated, it's a fucking joke. It really is. And a lot of this shit I fucking refuse to watch. I watch Walking Dead. I don't watch it for the fucking gore effects and the fucking zombies. I watch it because of the fucking writing and the characters. And that's what everything's fucking lacking. You don't build up any fucking characters. I mean, you really don't. I mean, I just saw this fucking movie the other night because I bought it. It's called Welcome to Hard Times. And it's a Western. It's based on a book. Burt Kennedy directed it. Stars Henry Fonda. But it also stars Lon Chaney Jr., Elijah Cook, Warren Oates, Janice Rule, Faye Spain, Royal Dano, John Anderson, Edgar Buchanan. The list goes on and on. Keenan Wynn. Now, there's a movie that's so fucking overloaded with great, great fucking actors, I was almost coming in my pants watching this shit. But would anybody today go out and dig this fucking thing up? I mean, you know, we were talking about Westerns last week. You know, when you look at the spaghetti Westerns, that's where most of your Italian horror actors came out of. And Fulci and others directed them. And when you look at, you know, American Westerns and going into, you know, some American horror films, but, you know, a lot of films, we have a lot of great character actors. And they may have been character actors over here, but if they got the call to go to Italy, they were top billed. They were stars over there. I mean, really, they were stars. So, you know, I hear this crap and it just pisses me off that every time this guy puts out a fucking movie that's basically lifted from everybody else that's come before him, everybody's fucking dropping to their knees and ready to blow him. Fuck him. He ain't original. He never had an original thought in his head. You know, and the thing is, there is shit. You know, if you put your mind to something, you come up with something good, you know. I mean, come on. Stop fucking, you know, stealing from the greatest fucking generation and era that ever put movies out on the fucking face of the earth. The pivotal generation that broke all the fucking taboos and shit. You should embrace the goddamn thing, not rip it off. Oh, I know you throw little homages here and thanks this and thanks that, but the bottom line is you're not doing a goddamn thing original. You know, you're just fucking living off what other people did. And people, you know, I don't get it. I just fucking don't get it. I don't fucking hate you as a person. I dislike you as a fucking artist because you're a thief, you know? And I mean, we all steal to a certain extent. But you're fucking grand larceny, dude, on a lot of this shit. It ain't fucking right. And a lot of the fans, unfortunately, don't want to learn about this shit anymore. And, you know, that's why I'm bringing Gary Kent to fucking Wasteland. Because you're going to learn from a guy like Gary. You'll learn from a guy like Ted Michaels. You'll learn from a guy like Bud Cardos. You're not going to learn from somebody who was a fucking zombie from The Walking Dead. He was a prop. You get a $20 signature from a zombie, somebody who was a zombie in The Walking Dead, is like getting a fucking prop tree to sign a fucking 8x10. Fucking, I don't get it. Maybe it's me. I just don't fucking get it. But that's what it comes down to. Most of the zombies, you know, all these zombies on The Walking Dead, there's no, you know, there isn't a bub or a big daddy. They're set up pieces that get fucking shot and blown apart. That's all they are. They're props. They're like trees, bushes. abandoned cars. They're props. Get an abandoned car at one of the shows. Maybe it'll be the next thing at a convention. Get a tire print from abandoned car on Highway 9. $20. Thank you. We'll drip a little blood on it. See, it gets fucking ridiculous. But, you know, that's my fucking rant. You know, it's the end of the fucking year, and it's been a shit year for a lot of people. I've lost a few people this year, unfortunately. You know, it goes back to fucking last year. My good friend Rambo passed away mid-year. One of the greatest guys I ever knew, one of the toughest guys I ever knew, Frank Gentile, passed away. A few others, my godfather passed away. And, of course, you know, in the little world of entertainment, we lost a ton of people. Most recently, Charles Durning, who basically people don't notice about him, was on Omaha Beach during World War II, was the sole survivor of his platoon, survived the massacre during the Battle of the Bulge, and was another sole survivor of his squad. Great, great actor, great character actor. We just lost him. Jack Klugman, who is mostly known for The Odd Couple, another great character actor back in the day on The Twilight Zone. You see him pop up now and then. Cincinnati Kid, I mean, great character actor. Larry Hagman, another one before Dallas, and I Dream of Jeannie, Mother Jugs and Speed he was in. He directed Son of the Blob. Unfortunately, we lost him. A singer who basically epitomized the whole 70s, Donna Summer. Fortunately, she passed away not too long ago. One who wasn't mentioned on the big reel was R.G. Armstrong. Great, great character actor, a fixture on TVs back in the 50s and 60s with all the Westerns, a Peckinpah guy, another great, great actor. And what can I say about Ernie Borgnine? Here was a guy who never had any aspirations of greatness, won an Academy Award for Marty, probably one of the most enduring actors we've ever had, another member of the Wild Bunch, pretty much worked until the day he died, another great, great person. Geez, it's just so, you know, we lost so many singers. Andy Williams, Whitney Houston. It's just fucking sad. It really is. We look back. I think Lucas Skew, too. I don't think he was mentioned. I think he slipped through the cracks also. Another one we lost. That's why, I embrace this stuff because these were the guys that, I came up with watching. These are the guys, whose talents I appreciated. These are the guys who took the chances so that, a lot of us could do what we do today. And, we learned about this stuff, through people I've had on, that I'm going to have on if we continue to do this. People are asking me, right about now, what's going on with everything? And I'm like, well, I'm at a crossroads with a lot of shit right about now. I thought things would change a little bit once I got out of Jersey, but I still, dealing with some of the same douchebaggery from my family and shit, and they just gave me the year-end ass-fucking about 4 hours ago, so that's another reason I'm in a bad fucking mood. But be that as it may, I am going to do this fanzine. I've decided to do this instead of fucking writing stupid shit on Facebook so people can read it for nothing. Not that I'm trying to be a dick, but I'd like to get paid for something. And I'm going to give you something you can pay me for. I don't know how it's going to go over, but try to get an issue together, before Wasteland, or a couple issues together and have them at Wasteland or sell them before Wasteland. That's one thing. As far as DVDs releasing, I was speaking to my partner and producer in that yesterday. It's going to continue, only it's going to be a little bit more bare bones than I'd like it to, but have to adapt to a changing market where, we've been giving you a lot for your money, and that we've been doing. But, now it's going to be double features. Select double features. That's what's going to happen. Don't know if there's actually going to be any more 8mm stuff coming out because we got a lot of, I personally have a lot of features down there that I'd like to get out, before they turn to shit. And unfortunately with film, age has a way of creeping up on it and fucking it up. And that's what's happening now. So as far as 8mm stuff, I did some stuff at the last show. It was so-so. I'm going to try. I've been working on a better technique to do it. I have a complete Linda Lovelace collection that's going to be out. It has Deep Throat on 8mm from the Peep Shows, which probably people have never seen before. Granted, it's going to be beat up. These reels are pretty beat up, banged up, but that's the way they were run, and I'm even going to have, you know, some stuff maybe that shouldn't be on that, but certain shit's legal around here, so we're going to do it anyway. So it's probably going to be just about, you know, an 8mm version of Deep Throat and just about every loop she was ever in, as fucked up as that sounds. So we're going to work on that, and of course, going to have Gary at Cinema Wasteland. Hopefully some of the Griffin McClaws will show up, push what we're doing. And as far as the book, still plugging along. Don't know how I'm going to handle it. I'm just trying to deal with certain situations and get some shit done. So that's the way it's going to go. So that's about all I got. And I'd like to wish all my friends, fans, and everybody out there the best for 2013. And for my enemies, go choke on fucking tree bark, because I could care less. And I hope this is going to be like a less adversarial year as far as conventions and shit than it was last year. But as long as certain people insist on being douchebags, you got to, you know, sort of like fight evil with evil, I guess, or something. So we'll see what happens with that. But look forward to keeping up the show. Look forward to being at Wasteland in April. And let's make 2013 a good fucking year instead of the piece of shit we're kicking out the door in a couple days. So on that happy note, stay sick, and we'll catch you next week.
My pussy is the hippest thing around.